You don't need 1,000 lights to make a name for yourself. And just whatever you do, do it with integrity and do it the best you can do and put your whole heart into it and take every day one day at a time. You're gonna have losses, you're gonna have wins. Your wins, stack them. Your losses, learn from them. And you'll get there. You don't need to be there tomorrow. You don't need to be there the next day after that. Life's a journey. Just have fun with it. Love what you do and show up. That's it.
Yeah, I want to say happy Father's Day.
Oh, thanks, bro.
Yeah, man.
You too, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
You have two boys?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, they're amazing. So.
How old are they?
3 and 6. Yeah, 3 and 6.
How'd you find like being a dad? Like when that?
It's tough. I mean, at first, like it was amazing, right? But they take your freedom. You know, and I'm not around kids a lot, right? So it was like, oh my God, this kid's mine and he looks like me. And oh my God, he's crying all the time though. You know, and oh my God, yeah. I can't sleep anymore. Or me and my wife can't just go on a date. Or me and my wife can't go do this, that. And so it was an adjustment period for that, especially not growing up with a lot of family. And so, but man, their love is addictive because it's so pure. Mm-hmm. And you give so much to it, that selflessness, like you don't get anything in return for the love that you do. You get hugs, kisses, but you know, it's a different kind of love, a love I've never felt. And so it's the bond that we have is pretty amazing.
You know, it's what I find. I have four kids, and it grows. The love continue. You think you're like, okay, how can I can't imagine loving anything more than I do now.
Yeah.
But then more time goes on and you're like, love grows even deeper.
Yeah.
You're just like, It blows you away sometimes.
It really does. It really does. I'll be holding them at night right before they go to bed. And yeah, it's this feeling that you get, you want to conquer the world for them, you know?
Yeah. So, what'd you guys do for Father's Day?
We just barbecued, chilled. Played nice. Some Legos, went and kicked the soccer ball around.
Nice.
Just late though.
Nice. I went out to Havasu. I went tubing with my stepdad and told the wife to give us a good run.
Yeah.
Bro, she kicked us off that tube so fast. And I got whiplash, so I'm still dealing with it. Dude, it's class.
Too old for that.
Dude, it's class. How would you describe your parenting style?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I would say I'm a teacher. You know, I'm trying to teach my kids to be men. I'm trying to teach them to be good people. I'm trying to teach them to have value and just like work hard and not give up. So like if my kid falls, I'm like, it's not how you fall. It's how you get up.
Brush it off.
Yeah, brush it off. You got to get up, bud. You know, I mean, if they're really hurt, then... You know, obviously, yeah, but you could tell like if they just fall and they can get up.
Yeah.
And so, but now my kids repeat it to me. It's not how you fall. It's how you get up, you know?
Yeah,
and so
that's dope.
It's, they're going to grow up with things that I didn't have. They do have some money in their life. And so it's about how you treat people and your work ethic and, your integrity, you know what I'm saying? So I'm just trying to, I feel like if I do a good job now, then like I won't have to deal with it all when they're older, you know, and going through their, everyone goes through their issues. But I think if you give them good value or good values right now, then you'll pay for it, you know?
What do you think the biggest challenges you face being a dad?
Not having a dad growing up, you know what I mean? It was, I don't know what it's like being a dad. I don't know what it's like to have a dad. And so, I find myself being a dad and I'm like, whoa, that's what it's like. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but, like learning with no guidance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You're just kind of learning as you go.
Yeah. And I take it from like different men that I've had in my life, as far as like a basketball coach. He was a big mentor of mine. I've had an attorney. My attorney was a good mentor of mine, that beat my felonies. I had a couple counselors in high school that really saved me a bunch. And so, you know, I take little things from them, some friends' dads. You know, my lawn at my home is like super perfect because my friend's dad that we grew up with, every time we'd go there, he'd be washing the truck and like out there with scissors cutting the fucking grass. I'm like, so now my lawn is just perfect and I dedicate that to him, you know? Yeah. So it's a,
what do you, what's the most rewarding part of being a dad for you?
And having something that no one else could take from you. I don't know. Like these are mine and they're a part of me. And, I get an opportunity to make their lives better than mine. Right. Like I get an opportunity to teach them things that I was never taught. And, I just can't wait to see the men that they grow up into. And, man, I mean, it's like your best friends, right? Like my 6-year-old, my 3-year-old is just now, like, you know, they go through the baby, the crying stage and stuff. And then around 2, you start to wrestle with them and start kicking a ball around. And so my 6-year-old is my best friend. Like he makes me laugh more than anyone. And so I got 2 best friends for the rest of my life, you know, and it's, that's more than money or anything that you can ever have. That kind of love, that kind of support, that kind of, when they look at you and like, they look at you like you're it.
You're the hero.
You're the hero.
Yeah.
You know? And I've never had that.
I think it's important to stay conscious of that, yeah. You know, cause we're living our own lives and doing our own thing, but staying conscious to one, how was it for you being a kid? Right. Yeah. To remember that.
Yep.
Like what was I going through? Cause they're going through so many different things. Everything's so new, emotions, feelings.
Yeah.
But also staying conscious of like being conscious while you're around them. Right. Yep. I think that's really important.
Definitely.
And making sure that you always remember that you are their hero. Right.
Yeah.
So everything you do makes a big impact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Respect.
Yeah.
Do you feel comfortable talking about a little bit of your family and childhood growing up?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
What was it like? I mean, you know, we talked earlier, you said, you know, you were born in LA.
Yep.
And then moved up to Washington when you're about 6 months old, right?
6 years old.
6 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was the transition like and having a father that went to jail?
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of abuse. You know what I mean? It's kind of, drugs bring abuse to families and alcohol. My real dad was into gang activities and, you know, just, he didn't have a lot of mentorship in his life. Right. And so, alcohol, drugs, my mom had me when I was 19, had my sister when she was 15. And so it was just kind of, they were kids and, you know, the stresses of life and stuff, I think I understand a little bit more than I did back then, but he made some really bad decisions. It was kind of the friends and the people that he was raised or growing up or being around at that time. I mean, you know, dealing with that, I feel like when I had kids, there's layers to it, right? Like growing up, people are like, well, what's it like growing up without a dad? And I'm like, I didn't have a dad. How am I supposed to know what it's like to grow up with a dad? And so, it was kind of all I knew. But now like that I have kids, I reflect on some of the things and I'm like, man, how could someone leave their kids? How could someone abandon their kids? And, I think the older you get, the more you realize how much drugs and alcohol have effects on people. I stay away from hard drugs. I do smoke cannabis a lot. It does mellow me down and stuff and help me, kind of just stay more in my zone, my lane. Alcohol and different stuff like that kind of get me wild, and so I don't drink and I don't do any other kind of drugs. I just grow weed and smoke it. But family. My mom made a lot of bad decisions also, you know, and so me and her have had a rocky relationship. Just the men that she's picked to be around us. And so there's a lot of forgiveness that has to happen to like kind of evolve from all that and get through that. But, sometimes you think of the things that people do, to their kids, and you're like, dang, how could you possibly be that kind of monster? You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's hard knowing that you came from that. Yeah. It's hard knowing that was your dad, you know. He's homeless in L.A. right now. He lives probably in Skid Row. Last I heard was he was living under a bridge somewhere over there. So it's kind of the reality.
It goes back to you know, being conscious, of what we talked about earlier. You know, it's how big of an impact that makes.
Yeah. You know, a couple letters from prison, that was all we really got. He doesn't know how to write. So, you know, he'd have his cellmate write. And I at third grade, I had better penmanship than him, you know? Mm-hmm. And then my mom, like, she was young and vulnerable. He just went to prison and she met some loser at a bar, right? And so he became her hero for that year, but he was abusive also, and he served 7 years in prison. We weren't allowed around him or anything. And so, yeah, she leaned on church a lot, you know.
It's good.
So she went to church a lot, and so I grew up in the church a little bit. But, yeah.
How old were you when you realized your family's situation was a bit different than others?
Yeah, you know, probably, man, it's a good question. I'd probably say middle school. I'd probably sixth grade, seventh grade. My dad got out of prison when I was in eighth grade. And I knew when, like, I went to my friends' houses and it was, like, more normal. And they had both parents and, you know, they had money for their bills. You know, I think that was the hardest thing growing up was you could hear your mom crying about unpaid bills and how she's going to make it. Right. And so we lived seven people in a one bedroom for a long time. And my house was in a flood zone. So it'd flood all the time. Every year it'd flood 3 feet of water in the house. And so, the church did help us out quite a bit with that kind of stuff. But she kept going, you know, she never gave up. She cleaned houses and just did what she had to do. She said she would pick men to try to help her, you know, afford to keep us, right? That was her whole thing with my stepdad. She stayed with him for a while because of that, longer than she should have. But I can get deep into that one. Yeah. There's a lot of abuse on that one.
you're a middle child?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest?
Yeah, so I got an older sister and an older brother.
Yeah, how do you think, you know, that situation kind of shaped your relationship with your siblings growing up? Are you guys still close now?
You know what's funny is we are close, but we go through, there's so much emotional damage when you go through abuse like that growing up, my sister especially. My brother took a lot of physical abuse, and so... Man, just some people know how to fight when tragedy hits and know how to, like, I use it as motivation. They use it as my life sucks and they gave up, right? And they have waves of not giving up and but it's tough, you know. It's, I don't know where I got it from, but I didn't want to be a statistic. I didn't want to be poor anymore. I didn't want to have people look at me like a certain way. Cause when you grow up poor and in an abusive family, the cops are always at my house. And so living in a smaller town, you knew all the teachers knew about your abuse. You know, the teachers knew everything about you. But as a kid, you didn't really realize that, that everyone, the whole town knew about the situation that you were living in, and they were judging you on it because you're a statistic to a lot of people, right? If there's no emotions to you, you're a statistic. You grew up with no dad. Your mom cleans houses. You know, like, you're a statistic. You went through abuse. You this, that, the other. You're probably going to go to jail. You're probably going to be a fuck up. You're probably going to, and I was for a while. I didn't graduate high school. I went through a lot of angry stages in my life, but there was always a part of me that was just like, man, fuck these people. I'm going to do it for me. I'm going to do it for my mom. I'm going to do it just to change my stars. I don't know. I made a promise to myself when I was young that I was going to be different and, you know.
Yes, you use it as fuel.
Yeah, yeah. I wish everyone could do that. But it's weird to me that a lot of people don't, you know. And for me, it's like, what else? Giving up, it sounds so boring, right? Like, I use my problems as like, all right, I give up. But really, those problems should be a reason for your fuel to prove people wrong. Yeah. I feel like you're at a disadvantage if you grow up rich.
100%. I agree with you.
I don't know. You know?
Yeah, because without hard times, like, you can't have good times. I think you need the hard times to have the good times, because it makes the good times that much greater.
100%. And so, I don't know. You know, I do my best work when I'm down, which has been a big help in my life. Because now that I'm 41 years old, and now I can kind of like trust myself that the scariest times are when I'm winning.
Yeah, because you're always, when you're winning, like, you're always wondering, like, okay, when's the shit coming?
Yeah. And then when the shit's happening, you're like, I'm going to win soon.
Yeah.
You know exactly what I mean? And so it's,
yeah.
You know.
I actually feel more in my zone when I'm losing.
Yeah.
Than when I'm winning.
I have to show up. Yeah. And you know, it's a part of, like, I hear these voices in my head, all these certain voices that I grew up with that kind of doubted me and kind of, you know, mocked me, made fun of me, told me, yeah, right. You know, and I thank them all, you know what I mean? The funny thing is once you finally prove all those people wrong, it really doesn't matter anymore, but I do thank them for the fuel, you know? But their opinions don't matter anymore.
I agree. But you still utilize the fuel.
Yeah.
Like, I even today, I bet, right?
Yep.
You still use your upbringing, and you still use the put downs and as fuel today, right? Yep. Now, 100%. Even though it doesn't matter what they think.
Yeah. No, always.
Always use it as fuel.
And there's always new fuel.
Yep.
You know? You would think after everything that you do, people would just be like, dang, you're doing it. And a lot of people do, but there's always going to be those people. So just use them as fuel.
Yeah. You know? 100%. Yeah. You and I are real similar in that. You know, I grew up, I had a family unit. My parents got divorced when I was like 16 though, but that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But I went to a different school. I was dyslexic. Drove the short bus to school. I got made fun of. I was like, short bus in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, there's two different kinds of individuals. You know, there's the individual that uses that to their advantage and uses it to prove people wrong and show, hey, this is, I can do this. Like, watch me.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
I didn't go to college, but watch me.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it's powerful when you do.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
And it's cool to watch people come up from that, you know? And I think that a lot of people grow up in bad situations. So a lot of people can relate to people that come from that, and they feel inspired, you know? And so a lot of people don't tell their story. I've always tried to tell my story because my story is no different than a lot of people's. A lot of dads are in jail. A lot of abuse happens because people are sad. People are happy, but I'm not trying to paint this bad picture, but it's people are sad. People have financial problems. you know, love problems, and they take it out with alcohol, drugs, and then their life starts to spin out of control and they lose hope of their dreams. They feel hopeless.
And well, I think a lot in the cannabis industry.
Yeah.
Because what we're doing is, especially back then when we started, when we all started, a lot of us, you know, yep. you, me, every, and a lot of individuals.
Yeah.
You know, the legality was very extremely gray. Right.
But
you have to be kind of grown up. It's like, it's not like not always a guy from like a nice part of the neighborhood that's got everything he wants, got the bicycles, got everything, living, you know, a wealthy lifestyle as a kid goes and starts growing weed. I mean, I'm sure it definitely happens, but most of cannabis growers have more stories like you.
Yeah. 100%. And that's what, I mean, and maybe that's why I love cannabis so much. It's because maybe the plant just speaks to people like us, you know? But I found a lot of comfort in growing the plant. And, I grew up in Washington and it's rainy, cloudy, cold, awful weather. And I love sunshine, tropics. And so when you go into a grow, it's the tropics and, listening to music and being able to just vibe out and be in the garden and just not worry about the noise outside. And then, man, people actually look at your work as an art, which in farming, I don't know a lot of different fruits and vegetables that people are like, oh my God, you grew pickles. Those pickles are fire, bro. Like, and I there's probably some fire pickles out there, you know, all the people that love pickles, I get it. Like there's probably better pickles than not pickles, but the cannabis industry, I feel lucky in that people actually really support me. You know what I mean? And really like enjoy my flower. And so, that's the biggest reward for me is when someone cracks that jar and it's like, whoa, I've never seen that before, you know, or look at that smell, you know, or, when they smoke and it's just too strong for them because most people, it is just too strong, you know? And our weed doesn't even test high in THC. Our weed is really high in terps. We get a lot of rewards in Washington and all the labs that test our stuff is the terps. We're always on the top of the terp list on everything. I just feel like the terps bring the high together. And so people say it's a more intense high probably because of the THC mixed with the terps. Terps, you know?
Exactly. So. I mean, it wasn't illegal to grow pickles. I mean, I think that's a big
good point.
You kind of had to be okay with going to jail.
Yeah.
You had to be okay with your freedom, to be able to be in this business when we were.
Yeah.
And I think, if you're a kid that has everything, you don't want to take the risk.
Yeah.
But if you come from nothing, you're like, fuck it. I got nothing either.
What do I gotta lose?
What
man?
Do I gotta lose? Fuck I got you. Nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay to lose my freedom. That's what it is.
I always told my friends, I was like, well, no matter what, my rent's going to be paid because I'm either going to be in jail or on the beach, you know, but my rent's going to be paid.
Exactly.
And so, nothing to lose. Exactly what you said.
What was your first introduction into cannabis?
I mean, probably like everyone else, like some older kid saying, hey, hit this. And, you know, probably a bong toke. You know, that was way too heavy for me. They would make it chalky. You know, this kid, he was an older kid. He was 20. I was probably 15. And I think I took a few hits off of a pipe before that, but it was my first time actually getting high. And these fucking jerks. So they had a bong. And they're like, all right, inhale. And they're like, get it chalky. I'm like, cap it. All right, do it again and cap it. Do
oh
it again
God,
and cap
dude,
it. Dude. It was just milked, right? And so they're like, all right, as hard as you can, just suck it up, you know? And
first hit.
Yeah, first hit.
Oh, my God.
And so I just took it. And I remember going upstairs, like, laying down on my bed. And I was like, please, I'll never smoke weed again if I can get through tonight. The world was spinning. My throat was on fire. They're laughing at me. And so I didn't smoke for like a year after that. And finally, a friend rolled a blunt for me. And we turned on some dope music. It was a good view. There was like four or five of us. And we had the best fucking conversation of my life. And I felt so just my dreams were like touchable. Like I could like see them. I could it was like this vision of like, no, wait, okay, this is the path I need to take. And it was a wrap after that. You know, I started smoking more regularly. And I just started believing in myself. I don't know if weed does that to everyone, but for me, that's what smoking gave to me, was kind of this
motivation.
Yeah. Motivation and ability to like see what I could do and believe in myself, you know, and just being like, what do you have to lose? And kind of relaxed my nerves in order to pursue my dreams, you know? And I think when my grandfather died, that was when I was like, I saw the opening with medical cannabis to really just be like, why is no one doing this? And I started researching like how it really does help people. And I saw how it helped me. And everyone said I had ADHD growing up, right? Oh, Ritalin, Adderall. But I feel like weed helps me more than anything with my whatever it is, ADHD, you know, I get nervous, anxious. I'm not a real social person. I can throw down a conversation with anybody that's I feel comfortable with, but going to a party with a lot of people and all that, I've always just kind of
a little anxiety.
Yeah, a little anxiety. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I just I'm not that social butterfly out doing all that, right? And so weed helps me with that too. I think weed is different with everyone, just how genetics are different, right? I think that's what's cool about cannabis is like, how could you ever know everything about it? Because like there's new humans being born every day and there's new strains being born every day. And every seed is different, just like every child, right? And so that's one of my biggest pet peeves about cannabis industry is someone will be like, oh, you grow, you know, let's just say donkey butter. It's one of my strains that I grow. Oh, yeah, I've had donkey butter before. And you're like, okay, like that means nothing to me if you haven't smoked my donkey butter or my cut of donkey butter or the way I've cultivated donkey butter. And so I'm glad that you didn't like their donkey butter. But until, you know, it's just different.
Yeah.
It's kind of like taking your child and having different parents raise it. That's the house. That's the church. That's the cultivation, right? That's the facility. That's the spirit. That's the employees. Do your employees love cannabis? I don't care if you just love cannabis. Do you hire people that love cannabis? You know, like, how do you run your... I've been to so many facilities that just are soulless, heartless, cultureless, all for the money. And they talk about yields, 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 yields. And they're missing the biggest part is why this thing is even that big, right? In the first place, it's how you connect it with people. And so for me, it was just, it's been kind of sad to see a lot of people. You started becoming like this thing in a circle of growers where before it was really cool. You'd meet people at the shop. And you couldn't talk about it a lot with a lot of people. But when you knew someone was growing, it was like, oh my God, you're growing too hard. What are you growing? And you would share genetics and it was just this love.
Yeah.
But now it's become more of like, how many square feet you got? Oh, I do 100,000 square feet, bro. Like I'm in 10 different states, dude. You know what I mean?
Measuring contest. Yeah.
And it's just like, man, like that means nothing to me. You know, I think that that's awesome for you if you're doing it great and you have a great team and you've and you've built a great culture over there on your facility. But like, if you're just trying to produce just blown out, terpless, non-trichome weed and just flood up my industry, I don't have a lot of love for you.
Yeah.
You know, because this is more to us than that. You know what I mean? And I feel like people have been, anytime where money is, corporate's going to come in and people are going to want that money. Right. But I feel like greed, I always tell my team this. I'm like, the definition of greed to me is someone questioning their integrity, their values for profit. And so people growing pesticide weed or cannabis that they really don't care if the consumer likes or not is kind of just greedy and grimy. And I don't think it has a lot of place in the cannabis industry, you know. Go grow strawberries.
Oh. You're seeing like that. I could be wrong, but my personal view that I've seen is, you know, a few years ago, everybody was square footage, getting bigger, all these public companies in Canada doing this, and everyone's talking about square footage.
Yep.
You're seeing all those start to fail, all of them.
Yeah.
You know, they're all failing.
Yep.
Right. And what my view or what I've been observing is there's this move back in to like culture and quality.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that too?
Yeah.
Or that's what really matters.
And that's why you got to stay steady.
Yeah.
You don't follow trends because it always comes back around to you. So we focused on quality because I smoke. And so I want to smoke quality flower. So if I'm growing shitty flower, I'm a smoker. I'd be so disappointed in myself, you know? And so it's just always been what we've done. And so there was other opportunities where I could have expanded more. I could have grown more. But I feel like I'm too real of a person for a lot of big investors. Because a lot of people are like, the cannabis industry was so new that these investors would come in and you would just be like, oh, I can get 10 pounds of light. And so on the balance sheet, it looks great. They're like, fuck, dude, this guy's going to crush this guy. But the reality is they never did any of that. And that's why they're all out of business too. And the people that did do it.
I mean, if you're getting 10 pounds of light, I don't think you're going to be wanting to smoke it.
Idiots.
I mean, it's got to be boofy. Just
big time.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe there is someone out there doing it. I don't know, but I've been doing this a long time and I'm happy at 2.5 pounds, 3 pounds of light. If it's really good quality and you've built a really good brand for yourself and your employees are good, man, you're doing good, you know, and you could grow that. And I feel like the whole world is kind of changing towards that. I feel like what you're saying is people are actually going towards more quality now.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that. And I'm, that's what I love about our culture, whatever you want to call it, right? Our community is, we always find back to quality, to craft, to this is an art, we want to protect it. And I feel like it connects, it goes back to what I was saying about cannabis connecting with humans, right? I feel like it has a different kind of connection with people to where the love of it always comes back to quality. Because as a smoker, if you smoke bad cannabis, you're like, the fuck was that? And once you smoke good weed, you never go back.
Never.
You never go back. Yeah. You can't go back.
Yeah.
And so you could trick people a little bit, but once they smoke good weed, they're never going back to that. And so, and you can't buy, you can't buy, like, those people will never be able to grow good weed. They can try to buy people to come in and grow good weed for them, but I feel like money can't just be thrown at something to cultivate good cannabis. Because if I had a bunch of money and I was going to start something up, it's, if you don't have the right team, you will never do it.
100%.
I mean, really, like, I can't grow all that weed by myself. So the bigger you get, you have to have a bigger, better team. and they got to be happy showing up every day. And they got to be able to go home and afford to live. You know what I mean? They got to be able to, like, because how would you feel going to work every day and not being able to live?
How many employees do you have?
I got 30 employees.
Yeah. Out of any of the cannabis brands that I follow right now, like, out of all of them, I've seen you put the most love to their team.
Appreciate that, man, because that's something that I want to do for my team. You know, I want to do it because it feels good. You know, like, it's not fun having everything yourself. And I even beat myself up about it. Like, I'm like, I could do more. And I'm like, well, why are you wearing this nice watch? That could put a little bit more on their table, right? Like, and so but I'm the boss, so I should have a little more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I drive a nice car, and like, they're not driving a nice car. But there is a point of taking risk and putting on for people, and my employees cheer for me. You know what I mean? And that means a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you have to be rewarded for the risk that you take.
Yeah. 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 100%. And I think when you treat them good, they understand that. Mm-hmm. And they want that for you. You know what I mean? And so, man, for me, it's, I'm always trying to do more so I can do more for them. And I think that's how you build something, you know, sturdy, that's never going to fall. You know, you can't wreck that. You know, you can't tear down that house. And so
when did you really start having a vision for Gabriel Cannabis?
Man, probably, you know, to be honest, my business partner, he actually created the name Gabriel. So I'll give him his flowers on this one. So we were looking up names and stuff, and we kept coming back to all these big companies that were named after just last names. And we didn't want something that screamed cannabis when you saw the logo. A lot of people were chasing, like, oh, Big Bud this or this, or, you know, it just... Yeah. Was trending, and I don't know. I just wanted you to look at it, and then you knew that was good cannabis if you knew the logo, right? So the idea kind of came about when he thought of the name, when Legal Cannabis came, because before, I was never trying to brand myself. You know what I mean?
Was it your initial idea to have a brand in cannabis?
Oh yeah, no, actually, well, when it became legal, yes. But in the beginning, no. Like, I thought people were stupid for doing that. Like, so for me, I was like, you're crazy. Like, that's a paper trail of how much product you've sold to the medical market. And so, yeah, no, I wasn't thinking about branding myself at all. Shops were kind of begging me to do it, you know, and they'd call me BG Gardens back in the medical days. But yeah, when it legalized, I was like, I want to share the quality that I have with cannabis to the world, you know? And that's when we got the license and we created Gabriel Cannabis. So
yeah. How many lights are you guys operating right now?
We are operating about 370.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you think you'd be able to do it that same quality that you're doing now on 2,000 lights? That's even possible.
You know, the thing is we've been doing it for about 8 years, that size of grow for about 6 years. And my team is so just dialed that I think we are ready for that next jump. If that right opportunity comes. But I don't think that you always think that you're ready and then you learn stuff. I think that every step you take, you're going to learn different struggles, different obstacles. Right. From a 5 light to a 20 light to a 50 light to a 100 light. And doesn't mean that you can't do it. I'm not going to sit up here with a big ego and be like, I'm going to crush 5,000 lights, bro. Crop yeah. One, you know, like that's stupid of me to like be that arrogant, you know, but of course I'm going to jump. I'm a shooter. I'm going to shoot, you know? I've been shooting a long time, so I take my shots wiser now. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not afraid of that. But it has to be the right opportunity. It has to be the right partnership. It has to be the right facility, or else I'd fail. Because everything has to be not perfect, but you need a good grower, you need a good team, you need a good facility, you need good nutrients, you need good lights, you need a little bit of luck. Yeah. You know what I mean?
100%.
Timing, you know, because you could have all of that and be in the wrong time. If you opened up in 2023 and you were badass, I'm sorry, bro. It didn't work out probably, you know? So it's...
2023 was rough.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was rough. It was rougher than, I think, what, 2018 was the last kind of, you know, downturn. And 2023 was way worse than 18.
Yeah. Yeah, 2023 was, you know, the cool thing about 2023 was we got to see that our brand was strong. And the kind of weed that we produce wasn't getting flooded on the streets. So the people that were loyal to our brand in Washington knew our quality and they knew they couldn't get it anywhere else. So our sales did pretty good. They definitely fell, but man, I got to see a lot of good brands go bye-bye, you know, that had decent cannabis. But I think people nowadays, more than anything, to a brand, they want to familiarize themselves with it. They want to feel connected to it in a different way. Okay, quality is one thing. How does he treat his employees? How does he run his camp? What nutrients does he use? You know, is he using pesticides? People want to like know your values now. With social media and stuff, they want to know, well, I can spend my money anywhere. Why do I want to spend my money with you? There's 1,000 brands out there. And so it's got to be more than just good weed. I think that your character and your employees' character and your facility has a character. Because I've given my cut to friends. Same cut, you know? And then we prepare or we go and like we smoke it together and stuff. And it's just different. It's kind of like they say that your dog kind of takes on your character, you know? I feel like cannabis is that way too. And,
No, you definitely have a cult like following, you know. I mean, that's an aspect of keeping your audience engaged. Is there any other thing that you think you do with operations or scheduling or anything that keeps that cult like following going?
You know what's funny is I need to talk more about how I grow. But I'm so afraid to talk about it online because it's against what a lot of people talk about. You know, like, it's just not what you typically hear. Like, I grow in ProMix. A lot of people are like, you don't grow in Rockwool. You know what I mean? And it's like, now you got to hear. Nowadays, if you say anything, it's you got 100 people that think that that's the wrong way to do it. And you're like, guys, there's a lot of ways to do it good. Just find your zone and stick with it, you know, and your lane, you know. I feel like so many people just copycat each other. So it came this Rockwool, Coco, and it's just these lights, this. And I feel like a certain point you got to do that. But there's a certain point where you got to like kind of build your own house. Your own custom house. It's your own facility. It's where this product's being produced. So
do you do anything else that's against the grain?
Yeah. I mean, we don't have a mom room. You know, that shocks the hell out of people. They're like, you don't have a mom room? I'm like, no, dude. I have 48 genetics and I've never had a mom room. And I don't have a tissue culture room. Why would I need moms when I have 100 beautiful 1 month, 2 month old plants going into bloom. And so I take cuts right before I go into bloom off of. And so now I don't have to. Sorry.
And you're getting
That was really bad words. Sorry. Shit, that was bad. No, but you know, strip down a mom.
But you're getting some of the freshest, newest growth.
Yeah.
Off of each individual new veg plant.
Yeah.
So it's fresh, fresh, fresh.
Fresh.
Not old moms. I mean, like I always say, like there's definitely a three, like you don't want to go past 3 months of old moms, and you definitely don't want to go to four. And that's when everything starts going south. Hoplane virus starts coming around. Like you start to have all these problems, you know? So with what you're doing with cloning off your veg is actually excellent.
Yeah, like save space.
It saves space, but you're just getting the freshest, cleanest growth off each individual veg plant.
Yep. And then the genetics that I'm not running at the time, I just grow like three of them and then take 5 cuts, 10 cuts and just keep it alive. And I just keep it in rotation. And so, but they're only a month old, you know, a month and a half old by the time I take a cut. So yeah, no need for a big mom room. You know, I go into some people's mom room and I'm like, it's wild. You know, one of the best mom rooms I've ever been in is the Jungle Boys. Those guys, they take it to a different level on that, you know? But I've seen a lot of mom rooms where you're like, there's definitely viruses in here.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I didn't have to go to college, but I go into rooms and I just know if things are good or not. I don't have to like know what term to use or anything, but I just know shit's off. or whoa, this shit's fire. You know, I could just feel it in the room. I feel like when you've been around grows, you can't teach that in college. That's why some of these guys coming out of college, you're learning a plant, right? And so a new process, and it's just going to take you a little while. And I can go into a room and I know if there's things going wrong in that room. And then I can go through it and maybe to a flaw, like where like I analyze a little everything too much, you know? And I know every grow has their problems, you know what I mean? But I think that it's a skill set that I've had for like the last 18 years, just developed over the 18 years, you know?
Yeah. You have 48 different phenos. And are you consistently pheno hunting new crosses?
So we do that a little bit. You know, I had a deal with Mike, a good buddy of mine, Exotic Genetics, where he would do a seed launch and he'd give me his personal cut that he had that he bred with. And so I'd come to market with it before the seeds would drop. Right. And so, but I did do some pheno hunts with him. I pheno hunted the Woe, Gary Poppins. I mean, Fat Gary. So we've done a bunch. I mean, we've done a bunch over the years, but mostly I'd like to get really good cuts. I like to do what I do well, and that's grow it and cultivate it. And I'm not looking to be a breeder. You know, I want to work with the best breeders. And if they can give me their cut and cut to the bullshit, then like I'll cultivate it the best way I know how.
Yeah.
But I do love pheno hunting because it's fun. But to make money at that, that's tough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It takes a lot of square footage when you're limited by your footprint.
Yeah.
You know, on 360 lights, right? It's really hard to do pheno hunts.
And I don't believe in 5-seed pheno hunts. I feel like if you're going to do a pheno hunt, do 100 seeds.
Proper.
Yeah. It's got to be a regular seed. It's not female, you know, feminized. I think if you're going to do it right, it needs to be regular. You need to take the males, take the females, you know, and you should do at least 100. And so that's kind of been the best results I've ever had was when I did a large amount of seeds.
Are you still working closely with Mike?
Not really at the moment. You know, every time you kind of got to, you know, you do a collab, everyone's super excited about it. And like, and then it just kind of got to like put it on the back burner for a minute and then bring it back. Everyone's hyped up again. You know what I mean? And but Mike, he's one of the best in the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's a solid guy. So, I really enjoyed our friendship that we built over the years and stuff. And he really does care about cannabis. And so we shared that. And so, yeah, Mike's good people, really good people.
you know, Alex told me something that I found pretty interesting. And he was saying that you do limited drops to the market pretty regularly. Is it biweekly, weekly, monthly? Like, what's that look like, and how do you operate that?
Yeah, so, you know, that's the other part of having a brand, is how do you engage the stores, especially on a legal market? A lot of people don't realize, like, how you have to bring it to market, right? Like, I can't sell it directly to the consumer in Washington State. And so it's me to the retailer, and then the state takes their cut. But so to answer your question, I guess.
Do you feel comfortable talking about it?
No, I do. I mean,
is it kind of like internal?
No. I think that I just think that people don't understand how to engage and get people to want you, instead of feeling desperate and reaching out to people and being like, I feel like everyone's main thing when they think about sales, they're just like, let's make cold calls. Let's call everyone. Well, you look pretty desperate. And so what we took the approach was, is let's get the consumer. Let's make the consumer want our product at the store. And mainly it's the bud tender. I mean, everyone wants to talk. I feel like the two biggest people in this industry that no one gives a dang about is trimmers and bud tenders. They run this whole industry. Dude, I mean, if you can't trim your weed good even, like, you just grew beautiful weed, and then I just see people just manhandle it and chop it in half, and you're like, what the fuck? So it's kind of, and then the bud tender is like, literally, how many people go into a store and is like, they don't care who it is. The bud tender's like, yeah, rock this one. It's 2 for $50. Or, oh, this one. Or, you know, and so a buyer for the store and the bud tenders, if you win them over on our drops, the bud tenders are going and buying 10. They're maxing out what they can buy from the store. They're buying it for their friend with their discount. You know what I mean? So if you get them and you get them believing in what you're doing, I think that that's where we started, you know? And so now we do a drop every 2 weeks, sometimes once a week, but I try to bring a new flavor once every month just to get everyone excited. We're always doing an old school strain or a new genetic every month, or one of each. And we're also introducing something that, so like we do joints, we do rosin, we do carts, we do flower. And so if joints, I see sales start slowing down, well, I'll pull them. You guys don't like my joints, then I'm taking them for 3 months.
So I'll pull
them.
Perioles off the market.
Yeah, and until I start hearing people say, where are your joints? And then I flood it again. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, people like what they can't get. And what they always remember how good they were. But if you spoil people too much, then it's not special anymore. And it's like, they're just tired of it. And so you have to keep it fresh by taking something away. And so if you constantly have things that you're taking away and then giving, you're always bringing new drops, even if it's an old school thing, right? And so you're constantly playing that game. And the stores love it because people start talking, you know? That's a little bit of it.
Yeah, I like that. The with 48 phenos in the bank, how many are you usually growing at one time?
20.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Sometimes more. I've been trying to dial it back, to be honest. I can grow better weed than I'm even growing right now if I didn't have to grow so many genetics, you know? Yeah. I miss the whole days where it was like 50 lights for one flavor.
Yeah.
And it was like, damn, that looks good. Yeah. You know, and trying to get even canopies with that many genetics, it's crazy. But I do know this, like when you come across a facility like mine with an owner that's active in the garden, that's a smoker, which I don't know how many of those are out there, but that's me. Your weed becomes what you like. I grow what I like to smoke. And so when you look at terpene profiles on our test charts, like a lot of my strains test in the terpenes, and you're like, well, yeah, that's what I like to smoke. And so like 90% of my strains were on this side of the terpene profile of, I mean, I can't even say it, you know, I don't even know the words, yeah. But they're very common. And then there's a few strains over here, right? And those are more my sativa, like Chocolope and Orange Kush Breath and stuff like that. And so I don't like smoking these, but I can name all these right here with this specific terpene profile that a lot of them are found in cookie genetics. That's why everyone loved cookies and gelatos and all that still to this day is.
With on the THC when you're dropping, what is your THC percentages that you're usually dropping in the market?
23.
Okay.
You know, sometimes even 19, sometimes 27, but my terpenes like 4%.
Is Washington still a THC dominated retail market?
No.
They got it, huh?
Yeah. I could drop a product with 16% THC and 4-5% terps and it'll sell out. And it's mainly because people want to try something new from me. And then at the end of the day, once they try it, as long as you just try it, go out and try really good weed at 16% THC, I promise you, you'll be so high that you won't even know that it was 16% THC. Like, I feel like THC is just something that it was the illegal substance, right? And so everyone's just like, oh, what's the THC? What's the THC? No one's smoking THCA. We're all set, you know what I mean? Or why don't you go smoke a bunch of THCA crystal with no flavor? Like, if you really care, that's not popular. That's not it. You need the full spectrum. I think it's even terps, THC, and there's even other cannabinoids
in
there
that
we don't even know about.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think climate and your church that you built, your house, you know, where you grow it, whether it's greenhouse, God's church outside, or freaking indoors, you know, I think that makes certain cannabinoids thrive, certain terps thrive, certain, you know, that's why, like, if I gave you a cut and you grew it in your place, it'd be a little bit different and you would see it in the terps and the genetic makeup of that plant, right? It's kind of like the thumbprint for a human. It's different. I feel like not just within the phenotype of it, but where it's grown and cultivated, I feel like it makes it different.
Yeah, 100%.
And there's a lot that we don't know about it.
Yeah.
And so
your pre-rolls are a bit different than the usual markets. Is there anybody offering the styles that you're doing? You're doing more of like a cigarette style, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And everybody else is cone.
Yep.
And, you know, personally, I like smoking your style pre-rolls over anything else. What's the market? What's the feedback from the market on your pre-rolls?
Well, we had these, we were doing the cones at first too. And I felt like, I was like, every time I rolled like a bigger one, I always wanted it to be straight, my blunts and stuff back in the day. And for whatever reason, it just felt like a fat cigar. And so I liked it a little bit better. And the cone just always felt a little like, I don't know, just kind of not as significant, you know? And I felt like people rolled the cone because it was easier to roll. To roll a nice, straight, even joint back in the day was very hard. But a cone, you could kind of just...
Yeah, throw it to you. I mean, you can pack it in and it's good to go.
And so you're like, well, we don't want to be just simple and like everyone, right? We want to be craft and quality. And so we cultivated these bombers, we call them, and they're 2 gram bombers. And those were our first straight joints. And they came as a pre-roll that we made over in India. And we got like 50,000 at a time and then we would stuff them. And that's what you're seeing here.
So you actually fill that.
Yeah. We fill this one. the 2 grammar. We actually fill it. It comes in a shell and then we fill it. And so, but my 1 grammars, we bought a machine. And this machine is, and I hate machines because they break all the time and all that. And I like people doing stuff, you know? But a guy in, where is he from? Vancouver, Washington. He built medical devices and he loved joints. And he built this machine in his garage and it's called the Blackbird. It's Roll Pros. And this thing rolls. You have to put fresh weed in it. So you have to grind
fresh
it up.
Fresh ground up, not fresh like some ground trim up weed. Or some yeah. dry trim or whatever.
You don't
it's
have
got to be fresh ground up.
Yeah, because when you're stuffing it, you have to let it dry for a while. Like you can't stuff fresh weed or else it's going to clog in like a pre-roll, a typical pre-roll. But this one, it actually uses a rolling device and it rolls it. And you have custom crutch and it could do glass tips. It could do all that. But a buddy of mine was like, I want to go invest in this company. And so he flew me out there to like, just get my expertise on it. I walked away buying one. They're $250,000 and it does 1,000 an hour. And I was like, well, shoot, like with machines like this, I started thinking about, okay, well, how am I going to incorporate the old world with also newer technologies and benefit me, my team, and just my overall company? And I'm like, so my new idea is if I can get machines and train my team on them, I can now make that person do the work of 10 people, right? I'm getting the benefit of, so like my machine rolls about 1,000 an hour.
But it sounds like over and beyond that, doing more work, you're getting a better quality roll, like a better quality product.
Big time.
Compared to like your average just
yeah
cone.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And so the machine did it. I mean, the machine does an amazing job.
Is it easy to operate?
Yeah. No.
No.
I mean, I'll be honest. When I first bought it, I loved it, but I started cursing it the first month because it's finicky. You got to learn it just like anything. And I have a few employees trained on it now and they crank them out. But yeah.
So now it's operating.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Oh yeah.
It's just dialing it in. Just yeah. like any machine that's doing something that's really difficult. You
yeah.
gotta dial it in.
And you could teach pretty much anybody. You know, it just takes some time, but it took us about 2-3 months. But yeah,
how's the market reacting to that style? Like, are you getting feedback on Reddit? Like what's the feedback online? Is it positive? Is it neutral?
They love it.
They love it.
Yeah, they love it. And they're realizing that it's freshly ground, good tasting cannabis in it.
Instead of, you know, crappy old trim.
Exactly.
Stuffed in some cones.
Oh yeah. You get the resin ring on them, the whole deal, you know?
Even on a, like a little 1 grammar. That's nice.
Oh yeah.
That's rad.
Yeah. And I mean, I only put good weed in there. It's all I smoke is my pre-rolls. I don't even roll up anything anymore because I love them so much.
Yeah.
And so, and this has been years and years. And so, and I could smoke whatever I want out of my garden. And so, that's what I want to put out to the public is what I love. Because if I'm a stoner and I love it, then all my other stoners would love it too. Because yeah. we all think alike. We all want the same thing. You know what I mean? That cakey textured weed that just sticks and smells great. And we want it to taste good. We want it to feel good. We don't want to cough. We don't want our lungs to be all messed up afterwards, our throat messed up afterwards. And so...
Your curing process is quite a bit different than anything I've ever seen. Can you go over the whole process and the infrastructure that you built?
Yeah, so kind of a fluke. I was reading High Times magazine, like probably, 14 years ago? And this guy that won this cannabis cup back in Spain, like for multiple years he won. I don't remember his name, but he cured his weed in a cedar coffin. And he believed in curing it. He chopped the whole plant, put it in a cedar like coffin and keep it in there for 30 days. And so I was like, well, cedar, that's pretty cool. You know what I mean? And I was building out a little dry room. And so I built this little cabinet out of cedar. And I researched cedar and I was like, oh, well, it, you know, mold. What is that word?
Antifungal properties.
Yeah, exactly. And bugs. Bugs don't like it. And so it was actually, and it absorbs moisture. And so I'm like, well, it's a natural dehum. And it keeps away everything that I don't want around my weed anyways. And so I just built this cabinet out of cedar and a little bit of airflow. But for me, I like it colder with a little more humidity, though. I like a slower cure. And so a lot of people say that, like, I should be at 50% humidity and 60 degrees. But really, like, I go 50 degrees with 60% humidity. And so I know that that's, like, a big thing with people online.
Yeah, usually it's, like, 60-60 is what... You know, most guys do, but you get it 50.
I like it cold.
I think colder's better.
Yeah. Oops, you know, preserve stuff a little bit more and stuff.
I keep the storage packaging room as cold as the air conditioner can go.
Yeah. That's so cold.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's you know, good for, I you know, not too cold, but as cold as, you know, the AC will go, as well, I'll take it for sure. Do you add dehues with your dry room, or you just use the cedar?
No. So I do have a few quests in there for sure. Yeah, I do.
And since doing the cedar, what'd you find? Like, what'd you see different? Did you see a difference?
I don't know. Cause I've never cured it anywhere else. Right. It's been for so long now that, and I don't smoke anybody else's cannabis. And so, no one says that it tastes like cedar. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But people do say that my cannabis has a distinct taste. I don't know if that's because of the cedar, but no one says that it tastes like cedar. Mm-hmm. Or it tastes, or they could even tell. So I don't know. I don't know. I know a lot of people don't cure it in cedar.
I don't see anybody else curing it in cedar. That's why I asked.
Yeah.
It's different.
And so I think when I give tours to people and stuff, and just the overall craftsmanship of the facility, having a cool cedar dry room is just that extra, like, check this out. You know what I mean? And so.
I see you run HPS and LEDs. What's your go-to? What's your preference?
Well, I think that I could, you know, as a grower, you got to be able to do it all. I think, you know, me, like, I like trying new things because I want to, like, challenge myself always, right? And so when LEDs came out, it was like, LED's way harder. You can't grow LED, you know? And so I was like, what do you mean I can't grow LED? I can grow LED. So I got my first 50 LEDs and I did good, you know? And that was when Brent was blowing my phone up.
Yeah.
You know, doing the cold calls. I'm like, who is this guy? You know? But, you know, slowly with Lux, it was, you know, I bought my first 50 lights from them and I rocked them. I mean, I liked the cannabis that came out of it. The humidity went up, blah, blah, blah. There was a few different changes. There was perks, pros, cons. So my advice now to someone, if I was going to set up a new facility, was I like the quality of HPS cannabis a little bit better. I think that you can grow really good quality for both, but I feel like the texture and just the overall look of the bud with an HPS light is a little bit better. You know, I crush that room every time. My LEDs always have just little issues. You know, the plants get way bushier, more humidity. But I think if you're going to do a double stack because you have really high rooms and you're trying to get as much square footage as you can, then LEDs is the way that you have to go, you know? And so.
What about smoking?
I don't know what it is about the HPS room, but when that's broken up and grinded up and stuff like that, it's smokes. I don't know. I like the LED though weed. I'm not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
it sounds like you kind of prefer smoking the HPS or no preference?
You know what I got to do when I go home? I'm going to do a blind test to myself, you know, because I'm curious myself, because maybe it's a placebo. Like that's what I've been doing my whole life. HPS kind of, you know what I mean? So, but I smoke a lot of LED weed and it's amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why does no one do a yellow LED light? Like the same spectrum as HPS. You guys know more about lights.
It's not very efficient.
That's why.
Yeah, it'd be really inefficient to make the HPS spectrum in an LED kind of format. That's why. Well, you could do a high red. I mean, that's really efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah, the high red.
Well, that's what I got in my veg still to this day.
How do you like those? The Lux 200 watt bars? So, you were one of like the first.
Yeah. So to grow in them, like with your eyes, like, and like where the grit, that's like, I love hanging out in my veg room. So that was the biggest thing that like I didn't like about them is you can't hang out in there. Like you're not hanging out in like an all red room, you know what I mean? And so for me, my veg was like my sanctuary. Like I'd play music, I'd vibe out, I'd talk to my plants. Yes, I do talk to my plants. And if you don't talk to your plants, I got to question your morals of growing. No, and so the red lights took that away, you know? And so the 6 hours that I have them off in veg is the 6 hours that I go and hang out with them now. But I do miss that, just being in there with the lights on and just rocking. But
did you go with the 90Rs or the 80Rs?
I went with the ADRs.
Okay. So yeah. it wasn't crazy, crazy red to where you're coming out of the room and you're just seeing spots literally everywhere. That's that 90Rs or
wait, I got the 90Rs.
Oh, okay.
Cause so the ADRs, I went and saw them at Jungle Boys.
Yeah.
For the first time. Yeah.
And okay. So you do have the 90s.
I do have the 90s.
Yeah. They're super red.
Super red.
Yeah. The 80s are a little bit more doable.
But isn't red light like good for your skin shit?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like in there like
there is like red light therapy and you know, infrared, you know, whatever. But
the plants love it.
Yeah.
The plants do. The stalks get really thick.
Yeah. The stalks get really thick, short, stocky, just strong, fast growth, super low watts. I mean, I bet you're probably doing like a 5x5 or a 4x4 with 200 watts or 400 watts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're getting just insane veg.
Yep. Big time. Yeah,
but can't hang out with the plants anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not a plant. The plants love it.
Was it worth the swap?
I think so with wattage.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Wattage. You know, I think it's all relative to what your situation is. But I think that they're a great light. And I've been seeing people do like the red spectrum on the undercarriage lights now.
Yeah. They kind of, a lot of them are using that ADR spectrum that we had worked on.
Yeah.
And doing the under canopy, I think like 120 watts or something. Have you tried that yet? Or
I haven't.
Yeah.
You know, when I like redesigned my facility like 2 years ago and did the double deckers, I'm a grower in the facility. I'm in there every day. And so I want to be able to, I was like, well, what's the difference between a big grow and craft cannabis? What people call craft cannabis, small grows. Well, you can access, it's so small, you can access every plant. You can look at every plant. You can treat every plant. You can see if a virus is coming or a bug or mold or anything, right? And so I have 3-foot hallways in every single hallway of my whole facility. I can literally walk up and down without touching a row, a plant, or anything and look at every single plant in my facility without moving a tray or knocking plants. Because as a grower, like when you go in there and you're moving trays and everything and you got all this work to do, it's a pain. You bump your shin, you scrape your, you know, it's just, it's a pain. And so I love it. I could sit there and just like listen to some music, walk up and down, identify any problems that I have. And I still, with the double deckers, I still gained percentage. I was just like, don't be greedy and go for more and more bloom lights. I can do this many more bloom lights if I got rid of these hallways. You're like, well, how are you going to grow all that weed with the best quality?
Yeah.
And so I have hallways. And so my point is I get side light. And so my bottoms get Good.
Oh, without Under Canopy.
Yes.
Okay.
And that was the whole point of that rant. Okay. My bad, man. I talk a lot.
No, all good. With irrigation strategy, are you using substrate monitoring, or are you just doing it by hand?
By feel.
You're doing it by feel.
Basically. Yeah. Sorry, everyone.
No, I think
you
know it's what great. I mean?
People are like, you don't use this.
A lot of the Jungle Boy spots are by feel as well.
Yeah. People would be like, take that watch and buy yourself some sensors, bro. Sensors fail, man. Technology fails. And so sometimes with technology, I'm just like scared. I know a buddy that doesn't even go to his grow for a week. And I'm like, dude. He's like, I went snowboarding. I'm like, that's awesome. You got a life.
You Romy, you mean? Is that Romy or no?
No, it's Nate up okay. in Bellingham.
Okay.
I think you know him. Romy does that though?
Yeah, Romy just goes. He leaves his whole room for a week. He went to Spain for like a week and a half.
Just timer.
I mean, he's got everything so dialed and just automated. Yeah. It's impressive.
Yeah. I knew this guy way back in the day. He grew in Alaska. And he'd set the timer for 2 months and he'd fly his plane and fly his plane back and he'd go crop it out.
2 months.
Yeah. He would literally like set it and then just like 12-12 and come back. And he would even like kill the plant and let the plant die like on the stock. So he would dry it without even cutting the plant. And then this was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, people set timers and go. But I'm like, all those people have a horror story of like, oh man, I came back and my whole room was fucked.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay to do it at like 6 or 8 lights, but anything big, you can't be going away for 2 weeks or a week.
I got too much riding on that.
Yeah, Sean at Demeter Design does the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll leave his room for 2 weeks and let everything come back. He'll come back and strip. These guys got it so automated.
Yeah.
Just so dialed in.
And my brain doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Some people are really smart at that kind of crap. And it like fascinates me that they're really smart at that because I'm not smart at that. And so I'm like scared of it almost, you know?
Are you doing any runoff tests or runoff numbers on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I see a problem.
Only when you see a problem.
For me, it's like I have a closed facility. I only have a certain amount of employees that are always in and out. And even on the garden side, we only have a few people. And so, you know, if I like I said earlier, like I can tell if there's something going on. And then I'll start wondering why and what is going on. And I'll start doing tests for it and stuff. But other than that, like I can tell if things are good or not. I don't know.
Yeah. So. What size pots are you using with ProMix?
Man, I say 1 gallon, but actually I've been learning that they're smaller than 1 gallon. They're like 0.75.
Flowering.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was just to be able to feed more. Because my whole thing was I used to grow in big pots too. And if there was a problem, I couldn't address the problem for like a week. And especially when the roots get locked out, right? Now it's going to feed way slower. And so so now like you used to water like every 4 days. And now it's like it's 6, so now it's 10 days. And so I can't even like get it back on schedule and feed it good food until 10 days. There's only 60 days in the life cycle, you know? And if you hit that bump in the road during flowering and stuff, like, you know, that would be a disaster.
How often are you usually feeding? About 10 times a day or?
No, I'm only feeding 3 times a day.
In 1 gallon?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. That's all. I feed once an hour before they wake up and then I feed around 3 o'clock. So my lights come on at 8 a.m. and then they go off at 8 p.m. and I feed at like 9 and then 3 and then at like 6 o'clock.
And what's the size drippers are you using? NetFM or
no, they're like just from your local
respect.
Yeah, bro. They're I think they're rated for a gallon every minute.
So they just do a flood.
Kinda, yeah.
They just drench everything.
Yeah.
And then you drench everything again. So full saturation, saturation.
Full drain off every time.
That's how Mile High Dave does it.
Yeah.
Yeah. he just does full saturations.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And he crushes. I mean, he's just one Spanibus.
Yeah.
And he's watering the same kind of, a very similar way, not the same exact way.
Don't tell anybody. There's a lot of ways to grow this plant. And so
it's, you don't have to do the 10 cycles, dry back.
I think for Rockwall you should, but what medium does he grow in?
He grows in cocoa.
Yeah.
3 gallon pots.
And cocoa is closer to what I grow in.
Yep.
And so I think you can get away with what we do with those mediums. But if you try to do that with Rockwall, you'll pay dearly probably.
Yeah.
Because when it dries out, it channels up.
Yeah, it channels and you're done.
So you have to do little feedings, right? Which is awesome for everyone that grows Rockwell. I'm just saying, like, I'd rather only feed 3 or 4 times, you know, and have that safety net a little bit.
So what's next for Gabriel? Like, what are the plans for future?
Yeah. The cool thing is we don't have an investor. We don't, I mean, I'm majority owner. I'm basically me and my business partner, and we've never had investors. We've never had anything weighing us down. So we're ready for the future. We're ready for that next step. We just want to be picky about that next step. And I feel like we're all preparing for whether it's this year, next year, 5 years, if we've already dove into the legalization, it only gets better if it's federally legal. Because now it's going to allow us to ship it across state borders eventually. I mean, whether you argue it this year or 5 years, I think for me, having my flower be able to be presented across the country is always the goal, right? But how do I do it in a way that a lot of people have failed at? And not to call out any big guys, but some of these big guys that have big brands rely on different cultivations to cultivate their flower, which means that their brand isn't stable unless they're really vetting those grows. But a lot of the people that need the help are people that can't sell their weed because it's bad. And so they put like a wrapper name on it or something of the sorts and just mark up the price. But that doesn't last that long. And so how do you do it? Like Jungle Boys, they're cultivating all their own cannabis. Which, how do you do that? That's like my goal, right?
Slowly.
Yeah, I mean, slowly.
Slowly. You do it slowly. I mean, I think seems like, especially a few years ago, everybody was in a rush. Like everyone's rushing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really respect, and I look at Ivan as a mentor. He's like my older brother. You know, we talk almost every day.
Yep.
You know? But one thing that he really drilled into me was slow down, you know, take your time. He's extremely patient, you know.
He just when you meet him, he gets that vibe. He gives that vibe off. You're almost like, what are you looking at, bro?
Yeah.
Like you're just thinking about something deep. Like every time I've met him, he just kind of like looks at me with like he's always nice, always personable. You know what I mean? But you could just tell he moves at his own pace. And he analyzes everything around him and he really takes in the moment, you know, and I've looked up to Jungle Boys since the day I've grown, right? Like they were one of the pages that I looked at like, oh, wow, look at what they're doing. And his love and passion for the plant has been evident since day one. And he's always stayed true to his word. You know what I mean? Hats off to him. You know, he's one of the biggest, he's the best in the game to me. You know what I mean? I think people could say Cookies or has a bigger brand, but that's because Ivan goes slow.
Yeah.
He doesn't just rush it to every state because he could. He could do that. You know?
You have to be really good at saying no when you're Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much gets thrown at you, so many different opportunities. And to go through like what he went through the last, 10 years or so of just everything being thrown at him nonstop all the time and just learning to say, no, this is not what I want for my brand.
Yeah.
Like it, to have that power.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And to have like the consistency and patience to say no.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, you and a few other small handfuls of brands mm-hmm. that are self-made, self-owned, self-funded, you know, there's very few now.
Yeah.
There's very, very few.
Yeah.
You know, he happens to be one of the biggest ones that are self-made, self-funded, no investors.
Yeah.
And to go through what he went through when everything was going wild, when the markets were going crazy, when there's $10 billion valuations at Arroya,
yeah.
when Canopy Growth was going insane, MedMen looked like it was taking over the cannabis game, right?
Yeah.
As far as like marketing and everything. And then you had all these things moving. And to go through all of that, when all that's happening around you,
yep.
and to hold the course
yep.
and just say no, or just hold the same direct course
yeah.
when all that noise is going around,
yep.
that's respect.
Yeah, for sure.
Because a lot of guys in that position or seeing all that's happening around you at the time, you're having one of the biggest brands
yep.
and you're seeing all this stuff blow up around you.
Most people would panic.
They panic.
They're like, sign a deal.
Yeah. We got to sign something. We got to grow. Yeah.
We got to get grow. Bigger. Yeah.
And he held the course.
Yep.
He exactly. said, no, this is my lane.
Yep.
And this is where I'm going.
Yep.
Fuck all this noise.
And what's the most common thing about all those people now? They're all gone.
They're all out of business. I mean, Arroya's market caps. I mean, I know last time I checked, definitely on.
That's what I love about this culture, man. It's yeah. you can't buy into it.
Yeah, MedMen's out of business, right? Yep. They're gone.
Yeah. They all believed in cheap weed.
Yeah.
You know, the driving prices down, volume, 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 greed, greed, greed. It doesn't work in our industry, our culture, you know.
Yeah.
Our community. So Ivan's one of the leaders in that, and he stayed the course for us.
Yeah, he did.
And so it's a respect for him for always, you know. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
One last question before we go. Got to fly out to Nevada right now after
right.
got a little hot box, so figure it out on the way. But what biggest challenge is growing up in the cannabis industry, you know, whether it be law, whether it be financial, you know, what was some of your biggest challenges?
Man, I mean, probably the law in the beginning. I mean, that was some of the stuff that I feel like you get lucky, right? You either win or you lose, or you're in that situation. So many people are in jail because of this plant. And that's what makes me really angry. And so it's crazy that I don't have to worry about that anymore because of where we live and our state laws and stuff. And I'm blessed that, but there's people going to jail for cannabis. So. And that was a reality for me when I was arrested for my 5 felonies. It was going to take a lot of years away from me. And I chose to fight it and I won. And, that's one of my biggest stories is just being able to beat that. Because if I didn't beat it, I go to jail. Yeah. I get out and I still do it, but maybe I don't, you know, that beating that case really emboldened me to go for it. And I opened up my first dispensary right after that and then just kind of saw the success. And so that was kind of the biggest moment. And I mean, but being self-funded is tough. All your profits are always going to building and growing because that's your passion. You know, people go buy shoes, people go buy this, go buy that. I buy grow equipment. I buy stuff for my grow because yeah. that's my hobby. You know, you buy your new exhaust for your car. I buy, you know, new lights. And so I spent a lot of money on my grow, you know, and, I love it and, we're fully done now. I can't even think of things. I mean, obviously Netafim drippers I could do, you know,
instead of the Home Depot.
Yeah. You know, we get them from your local irrigation system, you know,
they're probably Rainbird or something.
They actually are, dude.
They are Rainbird.
Oh yeah. And we use Hunter. Like control boards?
Oh, you use the Hunter.
Yeah.
Have you tried the Toro Revolution? The Toro?
I haven't yet.
We got to get you on open sprinkler.
I'm down.
Yeah. Have you, Sean gets you linked up.
Okay.
So we'll step up from that Hunter.
Right.
Irrigation controller.
Yeah.
The Galcon was like the first ones that I was using.
Yeah.
Everyone used Galcon.
Galcon?
Galcon.
I love that.
That was like the first one back in the day that we all started using.
Nice. Nice.
So we got you stepped up on that net of him though.
Well, you used to work in a grow shop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I lived.
So you know all the equipment.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. The way Ivan and I met is like everything Ivan would post, I would call the vendor and stock it in my grow store.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And smart. Then,
yeah. And I eventually met Ivan at my buddy Kirby's wedding.
Yeah.
And then started selling him hydro equipment. And that was it.
Nice.
What happened with the five felonies? How did that go down?
There was two felonies first, and I beat those because I had medical cards. That was a wild ride. It was, they arrested me. I had a quarter pound on me, and my legal limit was a pound and a half per person. And I was a provider for a guy named Jeff, and he had epilepsy. And he basically was selling out of a Mexican restaurant, and he was caught by undercovers. He sold to them.
Out of the restaurant.
Yeah. And he said I was his provider. But I'm a legal provider, and I had no say of what he was doing after I provided him. And so they had to prove motive of me knowing what he was doing, which I had no clue what he was doing. So at the end of the day, I was arrested, and the judge gave me back my weed. And so he found me innocent and was like, oh, I was the first person in Washington to get their weed back. And so the cops got so mad that
you were on the hit list.
Yeah. And so they went to Jeff's house and were like, hey, you need to change your statement and say that he knew about this and all that. And so we can keep prosecuting him. And so the day that he was supposed to, the judge was like, we'll give you 3 days to come up with new evidence on Mr. Gabriel to see if, we give him his weed back. And so on the third day, so there was videos of them, like, they gave this kid a DUI on a skateboard. And so they were like, they hated this kid. And, but he had an epileptic seizure and passed away. And so the day that they were going to change the statement, the cops show up in the morning and he's dead. And his roommate's like, he was drunk last night. He was drinking. And so they did a 3-month toxicology report. Like looking at me thinking I did something maybe, right? Like poisoned his weed or something.
Yeah.
And it came back natural epileptic seizure. And so what do? They charge me for 3 more felonies. So I get my weed back. I get that felony out of the way. Jeff's dead, and then I get charged for 3 more felonies. And I have to take those ones to trial. And I took them to trial and I beat them. 6 cops took the stand. They lied out of their mouth, and I beat them. And so,
did they?
And you can read about that case. I was found not guilty. So it was like 11-1 on the jury. And the cool thing about cases is you could talk to the jury after you beat, like after you win, you can actually talk to the jury. And so all the jury was like, the cops lied because they were just after me. It wasn't. So I had to take them to court. They were offering me a felony. That was my plea bargain.
Yeah.
It was a felony. I'm like, no, thank you. We'll go to court.
Did they try to come after you after the trial? Like the cops? Like,
yeah. I mean,
causing more problems. I mean, because they sometimes they'll have it out.
Well, so I moved.
Oh.
So I moved in. So it was crazy. The guy that I took over my first grow, this was in 2009. He was going to federal prison. And so he got caught growing with machine guns and stuff by the feds. And so he was going to federal prison. And so I took over one of his grows. It was like a little 5-lighter. And I was medical at this time, right? And so I was like, oh, I'll just hang my medical card, boom, 5 lights. And so I just like, it was on 5 acres in the middle of nowhere. So I just went and lived in there for like a year and just hid out from the cops, beat my cases. And once I beat my cases, I opened up my first dispensary with my attorney, Kurt. So
just rocking a 5-lighter on a 5-acre.
Yeah. Just going for it. It was the most peaceful time.
Yeah.
Because I knew no one could find me. You know what I mean? I knew it was just off the grid and I could just focus. And I really like fell in love with the plant because every night I'd go up to the garage and I'd smoke my joints in there, listen to music. It was warm. I was growing it. It looked different every time. I got to see how cool it looked and how healthy it looked and flowering stages. It's just like there's rewards throughout that 2 months, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was very therapeutic when I was going through some of those times, for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Cool, bro. Yeah. Well, I respect you a lot, dude.
Thanks, bro.
Doing it right.
Thanks.
And
appreciate
definitely
that, man.
Growing fire. Oh, so yeah. Keep doing what you're doing. Whatever you're doing is killing it.
Thanks, bro. You
so,
too.
Appreciate you making the trip out from Washington.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's fly to Nevada.
Yeah, that's one thing about Washington. I feel like everyone forgets about Washington. Like no one talks about Washington. And so I feel like I'm the kid from Washington that like, oh yeah, C-Town. Like we're kind of like the Supersonics. We're just like forgotten. You know what I mean? Yeah. We're almost Canada. We're basically Canada.
Yeah.
Like everyone talks about Cali, it kind of stops there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'm always trying to put on for my city, man. And so it's, yeah.
Good, man. Well, appreciate right. it.
Appreciate you. Thanks, let's bro. Go to Reno.
Let's
or,
go.
Not Reno, Nevada.
Nevada. Yeah.
Where is this at?
Vegas.
Where's your grow?
We're 2.5 hours past north of Vegas.
What's it called?
Caliente.
Caliente.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. All right. See you, bro.
Peace.